This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, the genuine, the original. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
We do welcome you into the program, the first show of 2026, as it is the Gas House Game for the next hour right here on KMOX. Would love to be chatting with you a little bit as we go through the program, especially if you are watching us on the video stream. Feel free to leave a comment, and we will get to those as we go along. You can always text into the program as well. My name is Matt Pauly. Mike Claiborne is going to be joining us in just a moment or so. We also have a guest scheduled for today's program, as at about 12:30 or so, we are going to be joined by Tony Barnhart, columnist covering college football for TMG College Sports. He's going to be joining us at, 12:30, and we'll recap everything that happened in the college football playoff over the last couple days. Three games yesterday, and then one game on Wednesday. And I don't know about you, I was pretty entertained by the games for the most part. Two games went the way I think most people expected them to go, and two games went the way people did not expect them to go. In fact, to just yell at myself a little bit, or to, you know, show you what I do and do not know, the games that I was most confident in would go a certain way, the two games that I was most confident in, I felt very strongly that Ohio State was going to beat Miami. And I felt very strongly that Georgia was going to beat Ole Miss. Well, guess what? Neither one of those things ended up happening. So that's all right. And now we've got a Final Four of the college football playoff with Miami against Ole Miss and Oregon against Indiana. So, we'll talk about that a little bit as we go along. We'll talk some baseball as well. Very happy right now to be able to welcome on to the program Mike Claiborne. Claibs, always good to be able to chat with you. Happy New Year. Happy day after New Year. And here we are doing the Gas House Gang.
Yeah, we are. Our first one of 2026, and hopefully we'll have some more fun than we had in 2025. But it's gotten off to a good start. We had some interesting football over the last few days, and I'm not really happy with college sports as it is because of the process of the portal and NIL and just coaches doing whatever they do, and now players are doing whatever they want to do. But once they play, you know, it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and we'll certainly talk a lot about that in the program today. We like to start the show with baseball, and Claibs, we're 7 weeks out from the first spring training game being played. It is remarkable how quick this comes upon us once we move into the new year.
Yeah, it really does, and it's really going to pick up now after the first of the year. We saw some signings and saw some people move around, but you know, right around the winter meetings. I think you'll see some activity going into this weekend. And I don't think you'll see teams and or players waiting around to the last minute. I don't think it really benefits anyone because, you know, we've seen guys wait until the last minute. They get to camp. They're not ready to go. You know, they're not in a routine. And I think for a lot of guys, they just want to get things squared away and just go play. I'm anxious to see what other teams decide they feel like they can contend. You and I were talking about this last week when we see Pittsburgh and Miami, you know, getting in the fray. So what does that mean for the rest of the league? And so I think it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. Teams have moved so aggressively and so quickly already in this offseason. I feel like if you're a player and you're not signed yet, all of a sudden the leverage is very much with the teams. And if a player or if an agent is in the ear of a player and they don't have a deal done, it feels like we're at the point now where unless you're a certain, you know, there's two or three, you know, high-level all-star caliber players who are still sitting out there for sure. But when we get to those rank-and-file guys, if they do want to find their spot, you know, well before spring training gets started, they might be taking a deal that they didn't think that they were going to be taking when the offseason got started.
Yeah, no, and I think that happens every year, though. You know, there's a pecking order of players that teams have an interest in, And then once those guys fall off the table, then everybody else is every man for himself. And it's unfortunate, but that's just how it's been. I think if I was a player, I would be more aggressive with my agent to let him know I want to get a deal done sooner than later. And I guess it also depends. Do you want a deal or do you want to play on a contending team? And they're two different things. You have some guys that are just taking deals to stay in the game. You have other guys who want to just improve their lie in being with a team they think that can contend. So maybe you take a little less money to have a chance to win. There's a couple of different scenarios that unfold here. And sometimes it's not up to the player. Teams want to wait and see what's out there. And then they think they can get a bargain. You make a great point. You know, those guys that take that one-year deal with a week or two to go before spring training, that's not really what they set out to do. No. But in some cases, they don't have a choice.
And more often than not, it doesn't work. You know, Phil Maton worked out really well last year. That is the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. That rarely happens. And I think Cardinal fans can think of somebody like a Greg Holland who came in late and just never, ever, ever, ever found himself. And that's certainly that's more the rule than the other. You don't want to just be available for spring training. Klebs, we're down there. When I get down to Jupiter the day or so before pitchers and catchers report, half the team is already there working out. I mean, this is something that guys want to be going through their routine at the spring training facility even before the official report date.
Yeah, you're right. And anybody who shows up day of is already behind. And the Maton story is so unique. He parlayed it into another 2-year deal. So, mm-hmm. I mean, those things just don't normally happen. And the game, I think, is kind of changing with regard to what a team's looking for. Everybody's trying to bolster the bullpen. And I don't know if we really have carved out a niche on what that market looks like from a price standpoint. You know, normally if you get 2 years out of a guy, 2 years and an option, then that's a win. You know, a lot of these guys are going in on 1-year deals and hoping that maybe a team might want to pick up an option because of innings or maybe performance. But, you know, overall, it's a very untested market with regard to what is the ideal shelf life for a guy that's going to be either a middle reliever or a guy that's going to bridge you between being a spot starter or a guy who can give you some length as far as your bullpen is concerned. Closers, that's a whole different story.
Yeah,
I think that's already been established. But it seems like now teams are really trying to bolster the rest of the bullpen where they have quality and also quantity because, Matt, we saw last year the Cardinals didn't use a lot of guys in the bullpen, but there are a lot of other teams that were going through guys in the bullpen, at an alarming pace. And I think we're going to see more of that, trying to keep as many fresh arms available as you can. And with that means you're going to have to go out and find some guys and roll a dice on some guys and hoping they have one more shot or not get overexposed.
I'll tell you what, if I'm running a baseball operation outside of high-end closers, I'm never giving a relief pitcher more than a 1-year deal. It has too much of a chance of blowing up. Relief pitching is so fickle. Guys change so much from 1 year to the next. It can be a small sample size sometimes on what proves to be a really good season for somebody. You should have so many of those spots in the bullpen filled up by internal candidates that you develop. I know some people would push back on it, but I think you can remake your bullpen on an every year basis if you need to, and it's not going to cost that much money. I would be so averse to giving relief pitchers more than a 1-year deal.
Well, I would probably look in the direction of the innings usage. You know, how many innings is this guy good at? And that would really depend on whether I give him length or not. There's some guys when they hit the wall, there's a certain amount of innings used, then it's not going to end well. And then you have other guys who maybe because they didn't pitch as much the year before, or maybe they're coming off an injury, they may be able to push through. But now, if you're a competitive team, you're trying to make sure you have enough at the end. And I thought San Diego was a good example. You know, the way they use their bullpen, they were on fumes down the stretch. So, you have to make sure you have some other guys who can come in and fill that void. And that's where I thought the Dodgers was a difference maker. They had guys that could come in and give them some innings because they weren't used as much early in the season. So you have to have, in my opinion, anywhere from 23 to maybe 25 pitchers in your organization that can help you. 28 would be ideal, because if you want to go through the season and get in the postseason, you're going to have some arms, because everybody can max out and expect to have anything left in September.
Final thing on the relief pitching. When we were at the winter meetings and we were talking with Hein Bloom every day, it was the first time that I can remember the organization did not seem just hell-bent upon Tink Hentz being a starting pitcher moving forward. Not that they've taken that off the table, but it seems like the attitude is a little bit more of, well, we'll see what makes the most sense, as opposed to Tink is a starter no matter what. I've long said that this is a guy that has proven he can't stay healthy, so the best way to remove some wear and tear is to see if maybe you can nurse him into the big leagues as a relief pitcher and see where it goes from there. This is the type of year where there's going to be some opportunities in the bullpen. Do you think we finally see a Tink Hentz make it to the big leagues and potentially as a relief pitcher this year?
I think that's how you start him off. You know, I'll tell you who he could be, the next Kyle Leahy. You know, Leahy was a guy that they brought along slowly, let him work in the bullpen. Once he really got established, he was one of the more consistent guys. Now, he's been given the opportunity to come in as a starter this year, and we'll see where that goes. Maybe he ends up being a starter. Maybe he ends up being a premier guy out of the bullpen. But I think in Hentz's case, I think you have to start him off in the bullpen, let him get some innings under his belt. I don't know what's more to prove in Triple A and Double A for him. It's just a matter, he just needs to pitch. And I'd rather see him, you know, taking a legitimate shot on the big league roster than saying, oh boy, he's going to be our real big option in Memphis. You know, this has gone on a while, and I know he's had some very unique injuries, but at some point you got to let him eat. And let's see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. He hasn't pitched a moment at AAA yet, Klaibs. That's the other thing in here. Like, we've seen him in spring training, and we know that his stuff can play at the big league level, but he can't stay healthy. He has not yet graduated from AA. So I think, you know, the first idea is to get him at AAA to at least get him some experience there. But I'm with you. Like, whether it's AA or AAA, like, at this point, it almost doesn't matter with Tink. It's about getting him to a point where he can push himself onto the big league roster, because it has taken so incredibly long for it to happen.
You know, and here's the other thing I would do. I want to see him early in games in spring training compared to him pitching to guys wearing 78 and 79 on their backs. You know, if we're going to fast track him, let's do it the right way. Let's get him some quality innings against quality hitters, compared to saying, babying him to the point where we say, well, he'll be ready to go to Memphis by June or July. No, let's see what he has. Let's see what he needs to do in order to be better and have something to build on. So yep. I think there's a couple of guys like that you want to look at, but I think he is a guy that we've put our hopes on over the last few years. And I just think now it's time to move forward and just see exactly what we have.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. You are locked into a Friday edition of the Gas House Gang. We'll take a break. We've got more coming up in just a moment right here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX, a Friday edition, kind of the final day of this holiday period. Life kind of gets back to normal coming up on Monday. Alongside of Mike Claiborne, I'm Matt Pauly. Again, we've got a guest coming up towards the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk college football, and we've do that with Toby Barnhart, who's going to be with us just after 12:30 here on KMOX. As mentioned, Mike Claiborne is alongside, and Claibs, a couple more baseball things before we do move on to football for the day. there was a report, Ken Rosenthal had it. There was some other people have talked about it. There's the possibility now that Anthony Rendon has been bought out by the Angels, that the Angels could be looking for a third baseman. Obviously, we know that the Cardinals would like to move on from Nolan Arenado. Do you think there is a possibility that maybe Hein Bloom is able to work out a deal and that Arenado's destination could indeed be in Anaheim?
It sounds like that would be a logical choice right now. I think what it comes down to, we're going to spread some money out here. Apparently, Rendon's contract, they're going to spread out some money and defer a little bit of his. I would think that maybe the Cardinals might be doing the same thing or would consider that if they are able to move Arenado. Now, the question is, what do you get in return? I mean, you don't want to give them away. But you don't want a bunch of guys in a uniform that can't help you either. So, and I don't know how deep the Anaheim organization is as far as their farm system is concerned. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. But just to move him for the sake of moving him, I've never been an advocate of that because he's still defensively the best third baseman in the organization, period. Now, if you get some help around him, who knows? I know you want to free up some salary, but – To free it up just for the sake of saying we moved on from him, I don't know. Because I didn't see enough from anybody else who could tell me they could play third base, even close to what he was able to do. And I know I'm talking about a guy who's going to be a Hall of Famer in Arenado, but this is a team that's going to have to scrap the score runs, and they're going to have to be very good defensively. And from what I saw as far as the other players who played third base last year, I didn't see that as far as good defense.
I hate to use the word runway, but that was what it was supposed to be last year for somebody like a Nolan Gorman, and just it simply did not happen. I would respectfully kind of disagree with where you're at, Claves, because I think the organization has to get past Nolan Arenado. And does Nolan Arenado make the 2026 Cardinals better than what they would be without him? Yes, I think so, especially from his defense. There's going to be a leadership void in the clubhouse, especially if they move on from Brendan Donovan. Like all your reasons for believing what you believe are 100% spot on. I just think we're at a point right now with this organization where it's time to move on from him and give some other people an opportunity, even if it's not going to be up to the level that you would have gotten with an Arenado.
Yeah, no, I mean, your point's valid. I mean, it's something I have to live with at some point. He's not going to be here after next year anyway, one way or the other. I just thought we'd be further along as far as having somebody who could fill the void. Now, again, I'm talking about replacing a Hall of Famer. That's probably not going to happen. But you have to have somebody who's going to be a corner guy who's going to have to give you some punch. He's going to have to be able to make some plays. But I'm thinking more from an offensive standpoint. You know, when you look around, this team was very very deficient when it came to power and slug. So whoever you plug in over there is going to have to provide that. And I don't know who that is. And for what I saw last year, I don't see that guy in the organization.
I don't know if it's Arenado at this point. It was eye-opening last year when he started talking about the fact that maybe – he just was never going to be the same guy offensively again. He felt beat down to me at that moment, and maybe we just caught him at a bad time. But the slug and the home runs and even the doubles and the things that you remember Nolan Arenado for, we haven't seen that in a couple of years.
No, you're right, and you know it happens. I mean, you know, who would have thought that he and Goldschmidt would have fell off the cliff at the same time when it came to offense? You know, I didn't see it. I don't think anyone saw it, but it happened. And, you know, there's some guys when it's over, it's over. No matter what you do, no matter what you do as far as working with a guru and a swing coach and doing this and losing weight and lifting weights and everything else that comes with it, when it's over, it's over. And, you know, will change of scenery do Nolan Arenado any good? I don't know. But I think, as you mentioned, we've seen enough of what he can't do. And, you know, obviously, if you're going to move on, you want to have someone who can at least give you a fighting chance. And I don't know who that is right now.
Yeah, I don't know either. I I think J.J. Weatherholt is earmarked for second base. There's always a scenario where the team doesn't trade Brendan Donovan and Weatherholt ends up at third. But to me, that seems like an unlikely scenario. It also seems like Weatherholt long-term is going to be your second baseman, and not that it's the end of the world that if maybe he played a different position and then moved over. We've certainly seen that happen with a lot. We saw it happen with Albert Pujols. Like it's not the end of the world, but in a perfect scenario, you get a guy to the big leagues, you get him at his position, and he never moves off of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you plug him in and you say, all right, this is where we see you playing. Mason Wynn's a classic example. Mason Wynn's our shortstop. All right, he's our shortstop for now. And there's no options. There's no plan B. This is where you're going to play him. And I think you want to kind of plug that same scenario in with Weatherholt, because I'm not sure if Weatherholt is going to have the sort of power that you're going to look for the third baseman. And maybe that element has changed as far as the game is concerned. You know, all I know is we don't have enough of it as we currently speak. We didn't have enough of it last year. We didn't have enough of it the year before. And I think if you don't get it, it's really, really hard to win these days.
It's really tough. And I think that's probably my biggest question about Weatherholt coming into his big league career is just how much power is he going to have. He'll have some pop, but I don't think he's a 30 home run guy. I think maybe he's a 20 guy that turns into 25 later in his career. 20 is about what the Cardinals were getting from their top home run hitters this past season when he looked at Contreras and when he looked at Burleson. I think Herrera, if he would have stayed healthy the entire season, he would have zoomed past 20, but he didn't. You need more than that. This team just does not have enough power, and I'm still not totally sure, kind of to your point, I'm still not totally sure where that's going to come from, probably outside of Ivan Herrera.
It's the search party is out. Let's face it, everybody's going to get a chance to get a shot at this. Okay, I don't think they're going to hand out positions just because. I think the sure things are Wynn's going to play short. You're going to play Weatherholt on the infield. I don't know where that's going to be. And Victor Scott's probably your center fielder. And Jordan Walker is Jordan Walker. And, you know, every year we hear that things are improving. You know, I've heard the same thing this year. But I think this is the breakout year for him. He's seen enough of what he can't do. Let's see if we can work on something that he can do and be better at it.
You would essentially hand Scott the job even after the offensive season he had this past year with a 600 OPS?
Yeah. And you know what? I would hand it to him because he was maybe one of your better defenders. Now, he would have his stretches where he'd have a lapse or two, but I didn't see anybody who was playing better center field than him. You know, and I think the other question is, for a guy who's hitting in the top of the order most of his career, the bottom of the order thing just didn't seem like it meshed for him where he was trying to do too much. He's not a slugger. He's a guy that should just try and figure out how to get on base, and he's got to be more selective. He gave away a lot of at-bats, and maybe that's from maturity of learning when you play a whole season that you have to be able to make adjustments, and hopefully he's able to do that. But I'd like to see him higher in the order. I'd like to see him lead off and try and manufacture runs in the first inning and really push the envelope a little bit more.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we are going to chat with Tony Barnhart. He covers college football for TMG College Sports. The Final Four of the college football playoff, it is set. Tony joins us in just a moment as you are locked into the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. It's the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, continuing to take you through alongside of Mike Claiborne. We've got you till 1 o'clock. Want to shift gears a bit and talk through college football as the Final Four of the college football playoff. It is set. Yesterday, I thought, was a pretty entertaining day of college football, even if two of the games were somewhat one-sided. But a little bit of a surprise, just kind of the way I would handicap it. I was surprised on Wednesday night when Miami beat Ohio State. I was surprised when Indiana beat Alabama by as much as they beat them by. Alabama, a complete no-show. That surprised me. I was surprised that Ole Miss beat Georgia. And I was surprised that Oregon completely shut out Texas Tech. So two games where I was surprised by who won, two games where I was surprised by the margin of victory. Klaibs, what was your takeaway from the second round of the college football playoff?
I'm still kind of reeling from watching Alabama get pushed around. You know, this is a program that we've seen for the last, let's say, 20 years that's always been physically dominant up front. I mean, every year you look at they're going to have a player that's going to be a first-round pick as an offensive lineman, but they got manhandled. I mean, it was just something I'd never seen before. And, you know, the play selection was a little different. They never had a running game all season long, but man, this is not the Alabama that I'm accustomed to seeing. So I think that was the biggest surprise for me. I thought Indiana really, you know, accounted for themselves well. They were tough up front. But the other games were entertaining more than surprising. I guess getting shut out, if you consider one of the top eight teams left and you get shut out, that may be an indicator as well. But I thought overall the games were fun. As I told you earlier, I'm not a big fan of this process that we're going through right now. But I tell you one thing that stands out for me also, that the fact that the four coaches that are still left all coached under Nick Saban at one point. What does that say about his tree?
Says it's pretty solid. And I think, you know, I'm a K-State guy, and I saw that happen with Bill Snyder and his coaching tree. To be somewhat crass, if you're a hard ass as a coach, even towards your assistants, and you hold your assistants to the say, because most coaches are going to hold their players to a certain standard. When you get those coaches who are holding their assistant coaches to a certain standard, and there's almost, you're not so much on the same level with the head coach. You're the level below. When you get those kind of head coaches, it might be really tough as an assistant during those years working for them, but those are the assistants that come out and end up being better in the long term.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the great coaches coach coaches. And then those coaches find a half a dozen, maybe 10 players that they coach. And then everything else becomes contagious as far as the culture. And that's what I think we've seen with those teams. And if you look at the four teams that are left, you know, they all are disciplined. They all are very fundamentally sound. They all have very good line play. And they can play defense. And that's Nick Saban. And it's fun to watch them. I don't know whether this is I know some people say this is just changing of the guard. I don't know if that's the case, man. I think it's just who can get in the portal and get good players and how quickly they can adapt. You know, it's one thing to go out and get players, but it's another thing to find guys who can adapt to what you're trying to do in a very short period of time. You don't have the 3-year plan anymore, the 4-year plan. You have this year's plan. Mm-hmm. And that's how you have to coach them.
Yeah, I mean, you are building your roster every single year. I just, to take this to Mizzou, I just saw that, you know, the quarterback, Matt Zollers, they just made an announcement that he would be back next year. And the terminology claims that they used was that Zollers has re-signed with Mizzou. And it's so uncomfortable using that terminology in college athletics, but that's where we're at right now. And not only is it re-signing, basically all these guys are on a 1-year contract. And some of the schools try to lock in guys on these NIL deals for 18 months or whatever it might be to get them in. And there's a lawsuit going on involving a Mizzou player who left Georgia early. But essentially, every single year, you are rebuilding your entire roster.
Yeah, and you know, in all honesty, it's always been that way. I know the greatest misnomer is he got a 4-year ride. He got a 4-year scholarship. No, there's no such thing. These are annual contracts that are renewed. The reason why we hear more about them now is because players are leaving. You know, there was a time when, you know, players would be, it was suggested maybe they might want to transfer because they weren't going to play, or they would just flat out tell you, we're not going to pick up your scholarship for next year. So, you know, terminology's changed. re-signing is something. But I'm going to go back to Missouri for a minute. Now, Zollers was a kid that didn't get a lot of snaps. Okay, I get it. But you can't tell me that with all the practice time you have, that you can come up with a half a dozen, maybe 10 plays that he can be very comfortable with, that aren't on film, that nobody's seen, that this is what your practice time is for. Remember, these coaches don't have part-time jobs. This is what they do. And players at this time of the year, after finals, they have a lot of free time also. I just felt like, you know, when you have that kind of situation, you carve out a niche and say, hey, we're going to run our basic plays that they've already seen, but come third quarter, fourth quarter, we're going to show them something they haven't seen. And I thought Zollers was put in a very awkward situation from play calling to just options that just really didn't give him the look I thought he deserved.
Yeah, Clips, we saw in that Vanderbilt game the arm that Zollers has. So we know that there's talent there. Is he really young? Is he not ready for prime time? All that's true. But that doesn't mean that he can't rip off a throw here, rip off a throw there. And for everything that you just said, for Zollers to look as bad as he did in the bowl game, for the play calling to be what it was, I'm an Eli Drinkwitz guy. I really believe in him. I think he's got this program going where it needs to go. But that was the play calling and the offensive philosophy in that bowl game was inexcusable from Mizzou.
I would agree. I was disappointed. I think, you know, when you look back, it was a disappointing season. I mean, first you have a soft schedule. You don't beat anybody, you know, that's on your level, at least you thought was on your level. And the way you ended the bowl season, it's a disappointing year. And the problem is, Matt, you just don't get too many second chances because of the portal, because of, you know, people moving around and the NIL money's got to be shifted here and there. And there's just so many things where you don't get that many kicks at the can. And I just think Missouri blew a great opportunity this year. And they're not by themselves. There's some other programs out there scratching their heads, too, about what happened. And I think you're going to see more of that as teams try and figure out just who are we this year. You know, the planning stage and we're going to redshirt this guy. And that era is over. Okay, these guys are moving around. And sometimes it works. And sometimes it doesn't. I think there are more guys who move in and go through the portal who probably don't have as much success than there are the ones that do. Now, we saw the quarterback from Ole Miss last night, and he's a classic example. He comes from Division II. He was successful there. He went to Ole Miss to be a backup.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's the man. You know, that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, there's some guys who have been able to make the transition. But there are a lot of guys, man, who just find themselves just in a different uniform in the same role.
No, especially I think this is more for basketball than football. There are a bunch of guys who exit, who go into the transfer portal, and claim the next things they know, they don't have a job. They don't have a place to go to.
Exactly.
And their career is over. Like, they're just,
yep.
That happens way more often than it gets talked about. And honestly, for the good of the student athletes, we probably should be talking about that more often. So they realize that unless you are a super high end player or somebody who's got something lined up, there's no guarantee of what you're going to have coming out on the other side.
Well, and I think there's just too many other people involved in decision-making. You know, you have family, you have now advisors, you have the assistant coaches from other places. I mean, there's a lot of people. You have the high school coaches, the AAU coaches. I mean, everybody's got a seat at the table now. And unfortunately, the table's not that big for a player who might be marginal on his best day. And until, you know, that bucket of water gets thrown in their face and reality sets in, there's a lot of guys, as you mentioned, man, that won't have a job anywhere. You know, my feeling now is you have to go somewhere and play. And it may not be your first choice, but you have to go somewhere and play. And if you're a really good player, they'll find you. And if you're a really good player, they'll find you, and you'll get a chance to play there. You might be a guy that might be the ninth guy in a chair, you know, compared to being the first guy on a team that maybe doesn't have the notoriety, but at least you're playing. So there are a lot of factors that go into it now. I only wish that the NCAA and the athletic directors and presidents can get together and come up with some sensible rules on what this should look like. Because it's way off the tracks. The NCAA, as we know it, has no power. They can't get anything done. So how they fix this, I don't know. But I don't like the way it's going. And if you talk to most coaches, they'll tell you the same thing. And I don't know who really benefits. Now, the player obviously is making money, okay? Good for him. But I think all the other things that go into it and what we knew as college sports, this is a whole new animal that I don't think many of us are really happy with.
Yeah, the NCAA did this to themselves. They put their heads in the sand for a long time, and now every time they try to put a rule in place, it gets challenged in court, and they lose it. And it's
lose all the time. They're the worst group of lawyers in the history of the legal profession. They never
they
win.
They do. They absolutely do. All right, one more break. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit about the Blues after they just had an absolute stinker their last time out. And you see them on the ice and Colorado on the ice at the same time, and it doesn't even feel like they should be in the same league together. We'll discuss that coming up in just a moment. You are locked into the Gas House Gang alongside of Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, on 1041 FM, KMOX.
The Gas House Gang is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Alongside of Mike Claiborne, I'm Matt Pauley. Appreciate you being with us. Just a few minutes left in the program. I'll be back for Rush Hour Sports tonight from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, myself and Kevin Wheeler. And then we have an encore presentation of a countdown to opening day. So you'll hear more of Claibs and myself coming up tonight from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Claibs, the Blues last time out on New Year's Eve, they're down 4-0 to Colorado less than 5 minutes in the game. They end up losing by a 6-1 score. They've given up 10 goals in their last two games. It's just more of the same. But when they have a performance like that against, not arguably, against the best team in the NHL, and you can just visually see how different they are to the Avalanche, it is so... It just strikes you, everything about it, comparing the two.
Yeah, you know what? Glaring is a word I would use. But you know what? Here's the other thing. I just don't see enough in this team. I don't see enough effort. You know, we listen to Jim Montgomery, and, you know, he's saying the same thing about what they're not doing. And there's no net front presence. There's no physical presence. I think, in my opinion, there's about four or five guys that show up every night trying to do something. And I'll start with Braden Schenn. You know, and I feel bad for a guy who gives everything he has. And it's unfortunate there aren't enough guys who are committed. And I don't know whether the fact that they just don't have a skill set or they've lost interest in knowing that they have a job. But this doesn't work, and I tweeted out the other night, it's time to blow it up. I mean, you know, we keep thinking, well, you know, we'll get to the All-Star, the Olympic break, and we'll turn this thing around. No, that's not how you win on a successful level. You know, you're hoping. You have to have a plan. And everybody on this team has been given an opportunity to do their job, and they just aren't getting it done. And I think there needs to be a change in culture.
Yeah. It's
They got outclassed the other night. You would have thought that Colorado was playing a minor league team. And yes. I know the score says one thing, but Colorado could have easily hung 8 or 9 on the Blues the other night. Easily.
Just from a speed standpoint. And when you are live at the games, you realize the speed of teams. When you watch it on TV, it's not as noticeable. So, Claibs, if you are watching a game on TV and it looks like one team's running a track meet and the other team is taking the leisurely stroll through the mall on a Tuesday morning, like it's remarkable just the athleticism and the speed and everything, how different it was between those two teams.
Yeah, you're right. And so the question is, are the Blues that behind in development of players with speed and skill? You know, have they made some draft choices that maybe didn't pan out? You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions that could be asked here, but the Blues don't have a difference maker. They don't have one. I'm sorry.
No.
You know, you look around this league and the good teams have at least two difference makers. The Blues don't have any. And the guys that you pin your hopes on to be that just haven't lived up to it with any consistency. Now, that doesn't mean they're not good players, but not in the role that you need them to be on this particular hockey club. That's not the case.
If you – I'm not – there is not a single player on this team that could play on a top line of a contender. And when you look at, like, Colorado, I'm not sure if you've got many second-line guys. I mean, this is – the talent deficit is remarkable.
Yes. I mean, it's not by a little bit either. It's not by a little bit. I mean, there was such a difference in play. And granted, Colorado was really, really good, okay? Let's not take anything away from them. But they just showed you how far you have to go in order to be able to compete with them. And I know some will say, well, look what the Blues did against Winnipeg last year. You know, they took them to seven games. Yeah, they did, but they didn't win.
No.
So they won three games. And you know, maybe some expected that to be enough, but that's not what you're here for. And something's got to change. You know, this the hope factor, and you know, it just doesn't work. And there've been some injuries. Let's not overlook that. There've been some injuries that have really slowed some people down. But at the end of the day, man, it's the same old story every night. And there's got to be a different tune.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. Claibs, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again next week for the Countdown Show.
Looking forward to it. Have a good one.
All right. Sounds good. This has been the Gas House Gang, the DGS, on the way next right here on KMOX.